We'd gone three in a row, and there was no beating the guy. I thought I was quick with my hands, but he was at a whole other level of hand-eye coordination.
That was just embarrassing, Dad said, shaking his head in disappointment. You need to know when to concede defeat.
Says the guy who cheats at every board game.
Only because when you kids were little, you would punch, scream, and pout over who the winner was. But you see, if I won every time, no fighting. It was genius, really.
So then why are you still winning?
Tonight's not about me, Jake.
He expertly deflected the question.
Let's talk about you.
No thanks, I scoffed.
That's one subject you know I hate talking about. Well then, this will be a short conversation.
Very, I nodded. Where's your hammer, Thor?
Kyle took it. Said something about playing whack-a-mole with Quinn's head.
Oh, that's... I stopped to ponder the vision of that in my mind. Disturbing. My father didn't seem the least bit concerned about his youngest son, although that probably had something to do with the fact that Thor's hammer was made of flimsy plastic.
Where's your costume? He asked.
Keith granted me an exemption.
Makes sense.
Why's that?
Because you're already a hero.
I bristled at his words. I really hate when you say shit like that.
Why? It's true.
My father always gave me way more credit than I deserved. I didn't have superpowers or a desire to protect the world from ruin. Really, all I'd done for humankind was save my sorry ass.
In whose world?
In a lot of people's worlds. He stopped talking for a moment, struggling to control the unexpected emotion breaking up his words.
But mostly mine.
I shifted in place, uncomfortable with my father's sudden sentiment. Where did that come from? I asked.
I have no idea. I've been feeling a bit nostalgic today.
Or maybe you're just getting weepy with old age. I spoke with bravado, but truth be told, I'd also been walking a very thin emotional line today.
That's entirely possible. But you know, I think about where you were, that broken kid, and who you are now. It makes me proud to know you.
Again, Dad broke down as he forced the remaining words out of his trembling throat.
You may not consider yourself one, but you're my hero, kid.
Damn it. Now I was swallowing back the noticeable lump in my throat. What the hell was wrong with me? This whole day, actually the past few weeks, had felt like an ending of sorts. Like life was about to change forever, and the uncertainty of it all was messing with my head. Struggling to preserve my cool, I averted my eyes to the cup in his hand, printed with the word WHAM. It was so stupidly random I had to smile. My dad had a way of sidetracking me with his wackiness, and I'd counted on his lightheartedness during the darkest days of my life. Without his positive attitude and penchant for off-color jokes at all the wrong times, I was sure I wouldn't be the man I was today.
Crap. Here came the feelings.
Thanks for always being there for me, Dad. I know I don't say it often, but I love you. His fingers pressed together like lobster claws. My dad clumsily wiped the tears away. I couldn't tell if he was trying to be funny or not until his words made clear he wasn't.
You don't need to say it. I already know.
Unaccustomed to sharing such personal truths, we stared awkwardly at his superhero cup, struggling to find words. Any words. Mercifully, my father pulled it together in time to turn our raw honesty into a joke.
Well, this sucks.
I know, right? I loved the guy, but he was not someone I wanted to dive into a deep conversation with.
Can I ask you something without you breaking down like a baby?
Probably not, but you can give it a shot. Before you married Mom, did you ever have any doubts that you'd be a good husband and father? He eyed me with interest.
Why? Are you having doubts?
Me?
No, I'm asking for a friend. Oh, right, Dad laughed. Here's the thing about me. I married your mother when I was 23. I was so damn immature, I doubt I gave it a moment's thought. It wasn't until after we were husband and wife that I was like, oh, snap, this shit is real.
Please don't use that word.
Shit?
His face twisted in surprise at the thought that I took offense to swear words, when I myself use them on a very regular basis. No, snap. That word's not for your age group.
For reals? I'm fly.
Oh, no, I cringed. Just stop. Pfft. He waved off my recoil. I don't think you realize how totally awesome I am. My son's a rock star, you know.
So I've heard. Can you please finish your story?
Oh, right. So I had to grow up on the job, too. Marriage is not easy. You've got to work at it, but the rewards are great. And I'm not just talking about sex, which is... I jumped in to stop him. The last thing I wanted when I was already stressed was to hear a story about him and my mother getting it on. Dad, seriously? No.
Sorry. Anyway, if you're feeling this way now, it's because you're a more introspective person than I ever was. Which is code for you overthink things. My advice to you is to just relax and enjoy the ride. It's unpredictable, but damn, is it ever worth it.
So then, why do you always make Mom sound like your parole officer?
Because it's funny and true. She owns my ass, just like Casey will own yours in just a few short hours.
Damn it. Why does everyone keep saying that? I'm not going to wuss out like the rest of you.
Oh, no? Dad's grin transformed his entire face. Talk to me again in 20 years.
Casey's not like that.
Neither was your mom, until we got hitched. And then it was...
Dad made his hand into a fist and squeezed. His face took on the look of a man being clocked in the nuts. I laughed, despite myself. He was always good at dispensing unhelpful advice, similar to those ladies who circled around a first-time pregnant woman in order to pepper her with tales of their own unbearable childbirth suffering.
Whatever, Dad. You don't believe me? Fine. Let me share with you my theory on the similarities between marriage and honeybee sex.
I didn't give him the benefit of a reply, as I knew more was coming and I didn't want to delay what I was sure would be an entertaining explanation.
See, the Virgin Queen takes a mating flight with a dozen or so male drones. Now, I know what you're thinking. Those are some lucky bees, right?
No, I really wasn't thinking at all.
I mean, out of the hundreds of eligible bachelors in the colony, she picked those winged studs. Except there's nothing lucky about it, because while the two were having tiny little honeybee intercourse in the sky, at the very moment of reckoning, the drone's genitals explode, and all his bloody miniaturized parts seal off the queen like a microscopic butt plug.
My eyebrows shot to the sky as I jerked my head up in alarm. This definitely wasn't where I thought the story was going.
Jesus!
Exactly. He nodded like it all made perfect sense.
After the queen got what she wanted from the poor hapless dude, he became totally useless to her.
I waited for my father to offer up any more words of wisdom, but nothing followed. That couldn't be it.
And?
There's no and, son, he said, shaking his head.
That's marriage.
Still a little shell-shocked from Dad's rather unpleasant portrait of holy matrimony, I made my way over to my younger brother Kyle, lounging on the couch. His eyes were closed, and one leg hung over the armrest as if he hadn't a care in the world. I envied his relaxed state of being. If I had just a tiny bit of his slacker mentality, I was convinced I'd be a happier person. Taking in his costume of choice, I had to smile. Of all the superheroes he had to choose from, Kyle had settled on Ant-Man. Of course he had. My brother could never just be normal and select a run-of-the-mill crusader. Oh, no. He had to pick a hero who, in conjunction with millions of his closest ant friends, had brought villains to justice by hoisting them over their heads and marching the bad guys off to prison. A swift kick to the side of the sofa didn't produce the instantaneous effect I'd hoped for. Instead of being jarred to a vertical position, Kyle casually opened his eyes, yawned, and stretched an arm out in front of him, reminiscent of a cat waking from a day-long slumber. Was he really napping during my bachelor party? What a dick. I pushed his leg off the armrest.
I'm not sure if you're aware, but when you lie like that, it totally shows your junk.
Kyle sat up and rubbed the sleep from his eyes.
I think the word you were searching for was hello.
Shouldn't you be out there saving the world from crumbs?
Oh, good one. Kyle faked a laugh.
Perhaps you're uninformed, but Ant-Man is a very complex guy with unique powers.
Yeah? Like what?
He can reduce in size.
That's self-explanatory, I said, pretending to yawn.
What else?
Well, he can command an ant army with his special helmet.
To do what?
I don't know. He shrugged.
putting little to no effort into selling himself.
Ant stuff?
You can do better than that.
Okay, how about this?
The glint in Kyle's eye was unmistakable. He has inferiority issues when it comes to the stronger, more powerful, and more handsome heroes who always outshine and underestimate him.
Sound familiar?
A grin spread across my face. I love your costume, man.
That's more like it, he said, matching my expression.
What can I do for you?
Nothing. I'm trying to escape Dad.
Kyle nodded as if he completely understood my reasoning.
Ah, yes, the infected ingrown hair on his butt cheek.
What?
No.
Damn, that man needed supervision when he ventured into public spaces.
Why would he be advertising that?
I mean, as far as abscesses go, it is fairly impressive.
I don't care if it's the size of a small country. I don't want that thing anywhere near me. I'm already traumatized enough.
Do you want to tell Ant-Man about it?
Why not? It involves your insect brothers, so you might have a unique perspective.
Dad just managed to connect marriage to the most disturbing animal planet fact ever.
Did you know the male honeybee's testicles explode after he mates with the queen bee?
Whoa, dude, that's brutal. I need to watch Animal Planet more often.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, his point was that marriage is similarly terrifying. Apparently, once I get married, Casey will transform into a queen bee, absorb my genitals, and keep me at her mercy forever.
Yikes, Kyle said with a dopey grin on his face. Good luck with that.
Right? Anyway, the part I don't get is what would the incentive be to knock up the queen?
Are we talking about you or the honeybee right now?
I smiled.
The honeybee.
I think we both know the incentive,
Ant-Man theorized.
At least he dies happy, right?
But does he, Kyle? Really? I mean, his nards detonate into a bloody mess and then he drops dead. I can't imagine that being a satisfying climax.
Kyle studied me as if he actually had something profound to say, but then he opened his mouth and ruined the moment.
I think you're making a big deal out of nothing. Everyone knows when you get married, you don't use your balls all that often anyway.
I took in that smug expression on his face, but consoled myself with the knowledge that he didn't have all that much wiggle room either. The way his relationship with Kenzie was going, he didn't seem too far off from walking down the aisle himself. Maybe when it was his nutsack on the front lines, he'd have more compassion for my situation. I nearly smacked Quinn with the door on the way into the bathroom.
Oh, shit. What were you doing behind the door? I complained.
Exiting, he said, appearing amused by his comeback.
Well, don't do that around me. It's creepy.
Sorry. Next time I'll send you a text when I'm finished pissing.
Quinn made a grand gesture of stepping back to allow me entrance. I took a quick pass at him with my eyes. He was also dressed up as Superman, but unlike Lassen, he filled out his costume like it was an actual fitted glove. I was still having trouble grasping the fact that my youngest brother was all grown up and standing a couple of inches taller than me. I'd always viewed Quinn as a little kid, but now, at 18 years of age, he was anything but. Packing a solid 20 pounds of muscle and rocking the disheveled hairstyle, baby Quinn was putting the rest of us McAllister boys to shame.
I hear Kyle's looking to kick your ass.
Yeah. I told him my theory and he freaked out and tried to hit me with the hammer.
What's your theory?
Just that he picked his costume to complement his ant-sized package?
Ah, now I'm getting a clearer picture.
Anyway, no way could he beat my ass. I can take him down in an instant.
I don't know, Quinn. Kyle's scrappy.
And you think I'm not?
It was hard to ignore the challenge in his voice, but I forced myself not to take the bait. Quinn and I hadn't been getting along all that well lately, and the last thing I wanted tonight was confrontation. He followed me back into the bathroom.
Okay, it looked like I was getting company.
Thankfully, Quinn honored the bro code by averting his eyes so I could relieve myself. Too bad he didn't think to keep the chit-chat down to a minimum.
So, he said, elongating the word, I'm still waiting on the songwriting session you've been promising me for over a year now. Any idea when that might happen?
Oh, crap. Not this again. And certainly not at this very moment. I'm pissing, Quinn.
Sorry. Please continue.
Now that he'd graduated high school and was no longer under the iron rule of our mother,
Quinn was focused solely on his music career and rallying for a spot as an opening band for the opening band on my next tour. We weren't exactly seeing eye to eye on the issue. By using good old-fashioned nepotism, he and his band wanted to sidestep the process of actually earning a spot on a successful tour. There was something to be said for hard work, though, and if Quinn's only route to fame was by piggybacking off mine, he wouldn't have a lasting career. I hadn't even finished buttoning up my jeans before he was back on the same line of questioning. So, a heavy sigh was my only reply. Come on, Jake. Just give me 30 minutes of your time. That's all I'm asking. No, he was asking for a lot more than that. I'm getting married in a couple of hours. Can we postpone your future for another day? You've been postponing for as long as I've been asking, my brother said, kicking around a paper towel on the floor with the toe of his shoe. Pretty soon you'll run out of excuses. I mean, it's a yes or no question. How hard can it be? In that case, no. My brother's eyes narrowed into angry slits. You're such an asshole sometimes, Jake. You act so high and mighty, but you're not all that. I didn't like the accusation in his words. For the first time, I realized there was more to his resentful attitude than just being a surly teen. What's up with you? You want to know what's up? I'm tired of you treating me like I don't matter. Anytime I bring up music, you brush me off like I'm some kid with delusional dreams. Well, I've got news for you, dickhead. I'm going to be a musician whether you like it or not. Be my guest. It's not like I'm trying to stand in your way. It's not? Because from where I'm standing, it sure looks that way. All I'm asking for is a little of your time, and that's too much for you to spare. You don't want time, Quinn. You want a handout. There's a difference. I did it on my own. Why can't you? Because I'm not you, Jake. I don't have a built-in tragedy to impress the judges. Immediately, Quinn's face creased as he winced at his own words. That? I didn't mean that. But his piercing words had already hit their mark, and through bared teeth, I snarled back at my brother. Fuck you. I know what you meant. That's not... I didn't. Save it, Quinn. Find yourself another sugar daddy. I quit. You can't quit something you never were. Quinn pushed off the basin and brushed past me on his way to the door, then stopped abruptly and walked back. No. You know what? I'm tired of you acting like you're the only one who suffered. Did you forget that I grew up in the eye of your fucking hurricane? Oh, well, shit, Quinn. I'm sorry if my suffering offended you. I should have been more sensitive to your delicate needs. Looking about ready to explode, my little brother stood there, clamping his hands into fists. I waited for his screaming reply, but somehow he held on to his temper. In an even tone of voice, he said, Actually, I changed my mind. I don't need or want your help anymore. I'm done begging for your time. A sudden draw of air turned our attention toward the door just as Finn, my sister's fiancé, strode in. Upon eyeing the two of us in our impromptu pissing match, Finn didn't skip a beat. Hey, guys, I hear this is where all the dicks hang out. His comment was unexpected enough to draw a snort of laughter from me. I glanced at Quinn in hopes the joke had evoked a comparable reaction and our argument would be over, but there was no levity in his terse stance. In fact, my sudden amusement set him in motion. Quinn headed for the exit, kicking the garbage can into the wall on his way to the door. That's just the attitude I want on my tour, I said to his exiting back, succeeding in doing nothing more than pouring fuel on the fire. He spun around, his jaw tense and twitching, and I waited for a volley of grenades to be lobbied in my direction. But again, Quinn refrained from comment, choosing only to flip me off as he disappeared from view. Whoa, Finn said, his eyes twice their normal size. What's gotten into him? Apparently I'm not making him famous fast enough. Like you did for me? Right. After introducing Finn to my agent, his career as an actor had taken off, and he just wrapped up a supporting role in a major studio movie. But the difference between him and my baby brother was that Finn had put in the work. He'd struggled for years and paid his dues, and now, finally, things were happening for him. There was no better way to appreciate success than to fight for it. Quinn didn't get that. He saw my early success and pointed to it as reason enough for him to get moving. But my experiences as a young musician had scarred me, and I didn't want that for him. My brother needed more than just talent and looks to make it in the business. He needed grit, and from what I could see of his coddled existence, he had none. I settled my attention back on Finn, who was appropriately dressed in a Spider-Man costume, seeing as he was the human version of that specific hero. A former stuntman who specialized in jumps and wall climbing, he could scale any surface with ease. Although, after the arrival of his 4-month-old daughter, he'd been spending a lot more time with his feet planted firmly on the ground. Finn was a hands-on dad and had taken to fatherhood with ease. He adored his little girl like nothing I'd ever seen. His devotion as a father was one of the things that scared me about taking the next step with Casey. As soon as we were married, she'd want to start a family. And as much as I wanted that myself, I was genuinely concerned over the type of father I'd be. Most men went through life without ever knowing what they were made of. I, unfortunately, couldn't say the same. Shaking off the uncomfortable thoughts, I asked Finn, "Where's your sidekick?" For the past hour, he'd been on daddy duty with a picture-perfect Gerber baby strapped to his chest. I suppose if you had to wear an infant around, my niece Indiana wasn't a bad one to put on. In fact, I'd argue she was the cutest baby ever to rock a superhero bachelor party. Clad in a Supergirl onesie, with a head full of wispy, light brown curls, Indy was as cherubic a little champion as they came. "Your dad's got her. He knew I was about to bring Indiana back to Emma, so he talked me into taking a piss just so we could delay her departure time a few more minutes." "Sounds about right. He's actually scaring me with all that impromptu singing he's been doing. I mean, the minute she's in his arms, it's like he turns into Barney the Dinosaur." "Finally, thank you. I've been trying to figure out who he reminds me of." Finn laughed. "Anyway, I've got to wrap things up because Emma's expecting the baby back, and if I don't deliver the goods, it's on my head." "You too?" "Huh?" "Nothing. It just seems everyone I know is totally whipped by their woman. I expected more from you."
"Really? Have you met your sister?"
"That's true. Lucky for me, I picked a less complicated girl than you." Finn scoffed at that. "Every girl is complicated. Some are just more skilled at hiding it than others. False advertising, if you ask me. Like those damn erectile dysfunction commercials." Oh, God. I felt a honeybee story coming on. "They give men a false hope of what a long-term relationship looks like. You know how they go. The pretty, smiling trophy wife doting on her man while serving up hors d'oeuvres and rubbing his back, all while he watches the big game on TV. And she's happy to do it. I mean, perfection, right?"
"Wrong.
That shit's not real. What human male has ever lived that fantasy? Not one, ever, in the existence of human males. We're talking not even cavemen, okay?"
"Well, cavemen didn't have televisions. Or, you know, hors d'oeuvres."
"Focus, man!" As he said that, Finn started stripping at the urinal. His costume was essentially an adult-sized onesie, and required a partial undress just to empty his bladder. We were friends, but not that good of ones. I turned away. "You see," Finn continued the discussion as he peed, "the commercials aren't going to show real-life scenarios. Where are the tampon wrappers in the trash, or the home-cooked meal she makes that's so nasty you wouldn't even feed it to the neighbor's dog, who barks all night while the baby's sleeping?"
"I feel like you're talking about yourself now."
"I'm talking about all of us, Jake. We need to drop these lofty expectations of marriage. Sometimes she's going to be a bitch, and sometimes you're going to be an ass, and all of the time the neighbor's dog will bark. But you make it work because you love each other, and she's the only woman you want."
Finn shook it off and redressed.
"My point is, if she makes you happy, who cares if you're whipped?"
"You're missing my point, man. I'm not whipped, nor will I ever be."
"Oh, okay,"
Finn said, eyebrows arched high in amusement.
"I thought I saw the movie La La Land on your phone the other day. Maybe I was wrong."
"That?" I mumbled, looking away in shame. "Wasn't mine."
"Right, of course. And the ruffled powder blue comforter with all those flowery pillows on your bed was your idea then?" And the potpourri in the bathroom that smells like an Abercrombie model took a shit. Also your brilliant mind at work?"
I hesitated. He was right. Casey was firmly in control of my masculinity.
She'd taken over my whole damn house, even though she didn't even officially live there. I was already a goddamn honeybee drone, and we weren't even married yet.
Well, fuck.
We left the bathroom, and the minute we turned the corner, my father was there, flying Supergirl down the narrow hallway. Indiana's eyes, wide as saucers, conveyed her pleasure with the activity by flailing her arms wildly. In the few short months Indiana had been on this earth, the two had formed an unbreakable bond. It was as sweet as it was irritating.
"Is she not the cutest baby you ever saw?" he asked,
but didn't bother to wait for a reply as he took off with her back down the hallway. Finn gave chase, much to the baby and my father's delight. I grimaced in annoyance, but nonetheless followed after them, having no other direction to go.
"Does she have to go?" Dad complained, pressing his lips to Indiana's rounded cheeks.
"Yep, it's her bedtime," Finn confirmed. "Time to say goodnight." Dad took his time, baby talking to Indiana, before finally returning her to her father. Still unable to keep his hands off her, he ran his fingers through her soft hair before catching Finn's eye and musing.
"You know, Finn, I'm not sure if I say this often enough, but thank you for having unprotected sex with my daughter."
Clearly taken off guard, Finn blinked back his amusement and answered in question form.
"You're welcome?"
After seeing off Finn and Indiana, I was intercepted by my brother from another mother, Mitch. Had it not been for him switching up at the wedding party and pairing me with Casey 2 years ago, I probably wouldn't be standing here today awaiting my own nuptials.
"The Green Hornet, huh?"
"Yeah,"
Mitch reddened. "I got to the costume table last."
"Really? Even behind Ant-Man?"
"Yes, surprisingly, Kyle had one of the first picks."
"Of course he did."
"He scares me a bit, that one," Mitch said, amused.
I laughed.
"You and me both.
I mean, look at him right now. What the hell's wrong with him?"
We both looked over at our younger brother, who had taken Lassen's black wig and tied it around his waist to give the appearance of a giant, hairy bush. Mitch and I laughed at his antics.
A lot could be said about Kyle's questionable decision-making, but even with all the accolades I'd earned over the years, there were times I wished I were him, gliding through life in an easy, fun-loving way.
"Although I have to say," Mitch broke into my thoughts, "Kenzie seems like a good fit for him. They're both sort of nutty in a very functional way."
"That's the most accurate description of them I've ever heard," I agreed.
"They definitely bring the fun." "Speaking of fun, I'm really looking forward to his best man speech tomorrow."
"Oh God, don't remind me. He has one directive. Don't embarrass me."
"Well," Mitch gripped my shoulder. "Good luck with that, man."
I nodded, adding a pout for a touch of humor.
"Anyway, Jake, I just wanted to tell you how happy I am for you and Casey. She's a great girl. I know you guys will be really happy together. Just like Kate and me." Finally, someone who wasn't regaling me with anxiety-inducing pep talks.
He and Kate seemed to have an equal and wuss-free relationship. Maybe I needed to hang more with manly Mitch just to even out all the other questionable males in my life, although I doubted I could spend enough time with him for any of his awesomeness to rub off on me. After his wedding, I'd aimed to be more involved in Mitch's life, but the reality was I'd only seen him 3 times since then. It didn't seem like a lot, but it was 3 times more than I'd seen him in the 10 years before that. It's not that we didn't want to get together, but he lived in another state, and, well, life got in the way.
"How's Max?"
"As cute as ever. He's at a really fun age now, talking up a storm, and you'll be happy to know my son can actually carry a tune, sort of like his namesake."
I was taken aback by the last piece of information. Mitch and Kate had chosen to name their first son Maxwell Jacob, and although I thought it was just a coincidence they used my name, Dad claimed it had been deliberate. Mitch, however, had never confirmed it until just now. Why he'd chosen me was a bit of a mystery, as the two of us had never been close.
"You want to know why we named him after you, right?" Mitch said, as if reading my mind.
"I'm a little surprised is all. Don't get me wrong, I'm honored, but you and I, you know."
"Yeah, I know. It's not about us or the friendship I hope to one day have with you. It's about your resilience and strength. Kate and I want our son to know you don't give up when the going gets tough. Who better to look to for example than his uncle?"
Why his explanation bothered me, I couldn't say, but I lashed out accordingly.
"I can think of a lot of better people to look up to than me.
What exactly do you plan on telling him about his uncle's resilience? Are you going to leave out the part where I stabbed a guy to death? Mitch jolted at my graphic reply. See, I wasn't the best role model, now was I? Maybe he should rethink the kid's name. I mean, it's not like I asked for the responsibility of being a moral compass for his son. God knows I had no fucking clue what I was going to tell my own kids someday when the topic would inevitably come up, but I sure as shit wasn't going to portray myself as some resilient protagonist. Unfortunately, my sudden outburst altered our easygoing conversation, and now Mitch looked justifiably uncomfortable. Damn it, how much more socially awkward could I get? That's why I needed Casey. She balanced me out and covered for me when my behavior lacked the required tact. Sorry, that was... I shook my head, unable to come up with a fitting excuse. Just sorry. Appearing genuinely concerned, Mitch waved off my apology while zeroing in on me and asking, "Everything okay with you?" "Yeah, I'm just off today. I didn't mean to lash out at you. It's cool you named him after me. It's just... I think you might be confusing my resilience with dumb luck." "Or maybe you're confusing dumb luck with resilience. You know what they say about luck, right?" I shook my head, not realizing it had its own saying in the first place. "Luck is not about getting what you want, but surviving what you don't want." I had no response to his words. I'd never thought of it in those terms before. If that were the case, I was the luckiest guy alive. "Anyway," Mitch shifted uncomfortably. We'd never had the type of relationship where heart-to-heart conversations were the norm. "Enough about that. I don't want to upset you before your wedding. I remember being in your shoes. God, I was so nervous." "That's me. All day I felt dangerously close to losing my shit." "In that case, if I were you, I'd keep my distance from Dad. The night before my wedding, he told me some horrifying story about..." "The honeybee?" I shouted out, slapping my hand against the wall. "Yes. He told you that one too?" "Like an hour ago. I think I'm scarred for life, and that's saying something." "Yeah, well, I barely slept that night because I was having nightmares of my nards exploding every time I closed my eyes." We both laughed, bonding over our shared trauma. "Someone needs to keep him on a leash during weddings," I said, "or at least warn the others." "Nah, I think we should keep that information to ourselves. Why should the rest of them get a free pass?" How could I argue with that? "Anyway, I've got to head to bed. Now that I have a kid, I can barely keep my eyes open past 11 o'clock. He gripped my shoulder. "Try not to get too nervous. Go into tomorrow feeling confident, knowing that what you and Casey have together is something special." "Thanks, Mitch. That's the best advice I've heard all day." The party ended shortly after, and I was escorted to my room by no fewer than a dozen superheroes. With capes flying and ridiculous kung fu moves by out-of-shape pretenders, no one was able to see past all the masked crusaders into the center of the crowd, where I was conveniently ducking to keep from being seen. It seemed, for now at least, that Operation Pretzel was still a closely guarded secret. I'd had doubts earlier in the evening as I worried the bachelor party would be my undoing. The last thing I needed was to be photographed in a drunken stupor the night before the ceremony. Casey and I and a team of specialists had worked tirelessly to keep the specific date and location of our wedding a secret from the press. After extensive searches in the Los Angeles area, an exasperated and overwhelmed Casey offhandedly suggested having the wedding back where it all began, sort of like a retracing of the steps that led us to each other. I jumped all over the idea, not only because I had a soft spot for Arizona, but also because it would force Casey to radically trim the guest list, something I'd been pushing for all along. I didn't want or need a big star-studded event. Marrying in a quaint little church with just Casey, me, and a small group of our family and friends was the way I'd always pictured our wedding day to be. The Avengers left me at my room with a promise to be dressed exactly the same for my wedding. Yeah, not only would that not fly with Casey, but Boris would surely drop dead on the spot. Keith stayed back after everyone had gone. I grabbed his hand and gave him a quick backslap hug as a gesture of thanks. "Did I do good?" he asked, even though he already knew the answer. "Were you sufficiently underwhelmed?" "I was, thank you. It was perfect. Just what I didn't know I wanted."
"Awesome. It's the least I can do. You've always been there for me."
response didn't seem necessary. We both understood his reference. Keith had, on occasion, required some special assistance that only a sum of excess money could provide, and I'd given it freely. Keith had always been my favorite charity. "So there's something I've been meaning to talk to you about," I said, hesitating as I searched for the right words.
"I know Sam will be there tomorrow. It'll be fine."
Samantha was Keith's ex-girlfriend. They'd broken it off a while back, and as far as I knew, tomorrow would be the first time the two had seen each other since.
"Damn, you're good," I said.
"Not really. I've already heard from Mom and Emma, and I promised them the same thing. I won't cause a scene," Keith said, shaking his head.
"You guys have no faith in me."
"I wasn't going to ask you for cooperation. I actually wanted to apologize."
"Well, that's new. I'm listening."
"Just so you know, I was against inviting her. I like Sam, but you're my brother, so my loyalty is to you. That being said, Casey and Sam are still friends, and she didn't want to leave her out."
"I got it, Jake. Casey called me a while back. She explained everything. It's not a problem. I promise there will be no fireworks."
Acknowledging him with a nod, I figured I'd try my luck and dig a little deeper. "I know it's none of my business, but what happened between you two?"
"Apparently women get tired of waiting for their men to get their shit together. Who knew?"
Keith gave off the impression he was fine with the whole thing, but I could hear the frustration in his voice.
"What shit are you talking about?"
"What shit?" he asked, high-pitched and disbelieving. "Look at me. I'm a screw-up. Always have been."
"No, that's not the way I remember it."
"Oh, yeah? How do you remember it?"
"You had it all, Keith. We all worshipped you. Hell, I wanted to be you."
"I bet you're happy that didn't pan out."
Keith smiled, but there was no humor behind the pleasantries.
"What's going on with you?"
"According to whatswrongwithme.com, I'm an insecure person who abuses alcohol and drugs as a way to both fit in and self-soothe."
"What do you have to be insecure about?"
"That's a secret," he said, putting his finger to his lips. "And I know you're accustomed to bailing me out of tight spots, but this is beyond your reach."
Crossing my arms in front of me and keeping my eyes locked on him, I let it be known that very little was outside my scope. And not only that, but secrets were my goddamn specialty. Keith faltered, clearly uncomfortable with my silent ultimatum.
"Fine," he grumbled. "If you really want to know, it all started with Mitch."
"Mitch?" My voice did one of those weird upturns, twisting the name into something cartoonish.
"Yeah, you know, Dad's other son."
"I know who he is. I'm just confused what your problems have to do with him. He lived in another state. We barely saw him growing up."
"You barely saw him? But when we were all really young, he and his mom lived down the street. Dad had shared custody of him at the time."
"Really? I had no idea."
"I'm not surprised. You were pretty young, maybe 4 or 5, when they moved to Arizona. Anyway, Mitch and I had a rivalry from the start. I'm not sure how much of it was my own jealousy, but he didn't help matters either. Everything was a goddamn competition to him, and you know me, I'm not much of a fighter. Anyway, the two of us were always jockeying for Dad's attention. 9 out of 10 times, Mitch got it. He excelled at every damn thing he tried, especially sports. Dad loved watching him play, and bragged about him to his friends. He never talked about me like that. I mean, Dad loved me and always showed it, but it never felt like he was proud of me. Then you come along with all your fucking musical prodigy perfection, and I was doomed. You see where I'm going here?"
"Yeah, I'm getting a pretty good picture."
"All I can say is thank God for Kyle. He's as unremarkable as I am. You know, the more I think of it, the more convinced I am that Kyle and I were pre-cum babies."
I replied to his observation with a hearty laugh. Keith's theory of their placement in the ejaculation cycle really would explain a few things.
"You and Mitch and all the other siblings got a full load of genetic material, but not Kyle and me. Oh, no. We were false starts. The opening band.
The appetizers before the main dish," I added helpfully.
"Exactly.
The fart before the shit."
Keith laughed and pushed me into the wall. "Okay. Now you're just being mean."
Chapter 4 The Uninvited.
After promising Keith I'd keep my mouth shut about his personal issues with Mitch, we said our goodbyes. Although I could see where he was coming from, I also didn't feel Mitch had done anything wrong. Was it his fault he was a good athlete? Or mine because I could play a few instruments? Keith's issues with Mitch were the same ones Kyle had with me. If we had certain talents, was it wrong of us to cultivate them if it overpowered the accomplishments of others? I didn't have an answer to that, but one thing was clear. Mitch and I were a lot more alike than I'd ever realized. Alone, for the first time all day, I leaned against the door. As fun as the bachelor party had been, I felt like shit. Casey had given me the opportunity to come clean early in the evening, and I'd turned all predictable, denying that a problem existed and freezing her out. At the same time, would it even matter if I told her? Would it change the outcome of tomorrow? I knew she'd marry me no matter what confessions I made, but this one would surely hurt more than the others. This one involved our future, and all she'd imagined it would be. "Nothing you can do now," I said out loud, pushing off the door and brushing off the nagging guilt. My stomach growled. Keith had filled the party with candy, chips, and sweet stuff, but nothing of any substance, really. I picked up the phone and called room service. A steaming plate of steak fajitas was delivered to my door a mere 30 minutes later. That had to be some record. I enjoyed my dinner, stripped to my boxers as I watched an entire episode of Hoarders because, quite frankly, I couldn't look away. Turning it off before I could get sucked into another episode, I retreated to the bathroom to complete the shit, shower, and shave portion of the evening. And using our hallway encounter as inspiration, I jerked off without ever having to cover my tracks. Yep, all in all, it was a good last night as a free man. The peace and quiet alone should have been enough to buoy my spirits. Not to imply that Casey talks a lot, although she does have a lot to say. About everything. At all times. Okay, she talks a lot. But that was part of her charm. Since meeting Casey, my stress levels had plummeted. There were times, even when we were apart, that we'd text or FaceTime, and I could feel her with me. We could be in separate countries and still be connected. So why was it tonight seemed so different? Even though we were in the same hotel, the distance between us felt wide as if we were on two edges of a fault line, and my side was crumbling fast. Damn it. I'd squandered my chance to enter our marriage with a clean conscience, or at least as clean as it ever could be, given my sordid past. Maybe it wasn't too late. I picked up my phone to text her and see if we could meet, but then I caught sight of the time. 1:48 in the morning. She'd be sleeping by now, and if I woke her, it'd only be cause for alarm. I put the phone back down and stood in place, feeling strangely disoriented. A sudden eeriness displaced the stillness in the room, and I was struck by the sensation that I wasn't alone. I drew in a sharp breath as chills prickled my skin. Oh God, not tonight. On high alert, I paced the room, checking the windows and walls as if that might ward off an unwanted visit. Yet I knew better. If they wanted me, they'd come at night while I slept. That was when I was most vulnerable and unable to fend them off. Why now? It had been over a year since the last ambush, and nothing had changed in that period of time. They knew damn well I couldn't give them what they wanted. Hell, they couldn't demand such things from me in the first place because they weren't even real. At least, that's what I told myself. Because if I really was having nocturnal visits from dead people, then I had bigger problems than I cared to admit. I had to assume the anxiety over keeping secrets from Casey the night before our wedding was what brought them to my doorstep at this late hour. They'd always fed off my stress, but since meeting Casey, there hadn't been as much of it to go around. But tonight, alone and susceptible, it would be a virtual feeding ground. I needed to shut them down before they could ever get started because, if there was one thing I was certain of, the ghosts of horrors past were here to ruin my wedding, and a trip down Ray Davis's memory lane was sure to do just that. Staying alert was key. I couldn't risk closing my eyes. Not tonight. Not on the cusp of having everything I'd ever wanted. Precautions needed to be taken. Without haste, I flipped the in-room coffee maker on and began brewing the first of many cups. The hope was that a heavy influx of caffeine might help me outwit and outlast my tormentors. If I could just make it to morning, The light flooding through the windows would drive out their darkness. With a remote in one hand and a cup of coffee in the other, I watched another episode of Hoarders, and had begun on the third when an unexpected development drew a startled gasp from my throat. I'm no expert, but once you start finding petrified cats under piles of trash, don't you think maybe your hoarding problems have exceeded the skill set of a Hollywood television host? Changing channels in rapid succession, I didn't stop until I found one that was off-air. I stared at the blank screen, mesmerized by the soft hum. The white noise was working in much the same way Casey's relaxing buzz did. I stayed strong for a couple of hours, keeping the unwanted visitors at bay, but as my drowsy eyes began to droop, even the endless cups of coffee were not enough to save me. Slowly I drifted off into oblivion and into the nightmare world, which now only existed in my dreams. Whether I liked it or not, another night would be laid to waste in Ray's handcrafted hell. Only tonight I wouldn't be suffering alone, as I'd been joined by a handful of angry spirits hell-bent on making me pay. My unwelcome companions had first appeared to me at one of the lowest points of my life, during a time when hallucinations had become my new reality. Talking bugs, bleeding walls, and spiteful spooks had all become a part of my uninvited extended family. Emerging through the cracks in the rickety floorboards, each apparition was more ghastly than the next. Even as a 13-year-old kid banging his fist on death's door, I knew instantly who they were. The alumni, if you will, of Ray's former victims. But what they wanted from me had yet to be revealed. In all their deathly decay, the ghosts had materialized after the injury to my knee and stayed with me throughout that last excruciating week of captivity. At first I'd cowered in their presence, begging for mercy, as I assumed their presence was an ominous sign, a signal of my impending demise. However, the only pain they ever inflicted was on my impaired mind, which at the time could no longer be trusted. It soon became clear that these were no murderous ghouls, but tortured young souls fighting, just as I was, to free themselves from a killer's hold. They were not my adversaries, but my brothers in arms, the band of bloody misfits I'd been destined to share the afterlife with. Or at least that had been the plan until I made my harrowing escape and left them to their misery for all of eternity. It was with these doomed spirits that I spent the final night of my pre-wedded life, tossing and turning, covered in a cold sweat as I battled the ghosts of nightmares past. I think it goes without saying that when morning mercifully rolled around, I was far from the confident, enthusiastic groom Casey expected me to be. Hell, at this point, she'd be lucky if I wasn't babbling incoherently in a corner after the nocturnal torture session I just survived. How was I supposed to get my head right before the ceremony with the memory of a half a dozen souls screaming in my ear? This was exactly why I'd fought to keep awake. Now I was a mess, and I had no one to blame but myself. It was too late to contact Casey. Besides, what could she do anyway? I just had to pull it together on my own and get through the day. All I needed was a little self-soothing. What had I read again on that topic? Ingest hard drugs. Ah, yeah, probably not the best idea. Talk about swapping one problem for another. Maybe I could take a cue from toddlers and get into the habit of thumb-sucking. That seemed to calm them right down. But, oh hell, who was I kidding? I'd tried it before and it didn't fucking work. The only other thing I could think of on such short notice was deep breathing. Yes, that one seemed reasonable. I mean, how hard could breathing be? I did it all day long. We had a winner. Focusing on taking long, soothing inhales while blowing out the air in loud, exaggerated grunts, I soon discovered it did nothing but make me focus on inhaling and exhaling, and in no time at all, I was hyperventilating and breathing into a paper laundry bag I found in the closet. Okay, so this was definitely not working. Soothing myself had been an epic fail, and now I only had 3 more hours left to get my shit together. I needed Casey. Picking up my phone, I called her number but was disappointed when it went to voicemail. I didn't bother leaving a message. She was getting married today. There was no way she had time for me. My thoughts were interrupted by a hasty series of knocks on my door. Because I'd awakened so late, I'd slept through the meeting time with my groomsmen. I opened the door to Kyle, who immediately startled at my appearance.
"Oh, shit, are you okay?" he asked. "Why aren't you ready?"
"Rough night." His eyes rolled over me.
"I should say so."
"Why? Do I look that bad?"
"Well, remember that time you got the stomach flu and it was coming out of both ends for 2 days straight?"
"Yeah."
"Right, so you only look slightly better than that."
"Damn it. Okay, I'm going to jump in the shower. Can you stall for me?"
"Please. You know that's my specialty."
Talking to Casey was going to have to wait. I'd just have to get ready and meet her at the church. I'd be cutting it close. But what was the alternative?
Peeking out the door, I eyed the building across the courtyard. The last time I was here, I'd been forced to run across the patio area to avoid getting caught by a group of teens, but this time I didn't see anyone but a security guard patrolling the area. Nice. Operation Pretzel was in full swing. It appeared Casey and I had pulled off the impossible. I'd arrived at the church a while back, and after meeting with the minister and dressing in my tux, I was ready to go with an hour and a half to spare. This was the time I'd slip over to the other building and pull Casey aside. It would be a quick trip, long enough for me to come clean and get back to my side if she still wanted to marry me after my confession. Just as I was pushing the door open, a hand reached out and slammed it shut in my face.
"I wouldn't do that, Jake."
Winded and flushed, Kyle stood beside me, panting as his hand gripped the door handle, preventing my exit.
"I need to see her real quick." He raised one brow. "Before the wedding? Bad choice, dude."
"Look, I know all about the wedding rules, but this can't wait."
"Actually, it might have to," he said. "We've got a minor security issue. I just checked. Everything looks good. Right?"
Kyle hesitated.
"It depends on what your definition of good is."
"Probably the same as most people's. Why? What happened?"
"It appears we've had a leak, but there's no reason for alarm. It's really not a big deal. Security is handling it."
"Does that mean the media is here?"
"They are," he affirmed. "And a few fans, too, but they've been pushed back."
"Pushed back? That doesn't sound like a few."
"It depends on your definition of a few."
"Three or four? A few?"
"Right, so our definitions are a bit different. When I say a few, I'm talking in the hundreds."
"Ah, Kyle, just spit it out. You're starting to piss me off."
"We've got a few hundred fans and paparazzi gathered outside the church, but the local police are on it, and so there's nothing to worry about."
"The local police now? Are we going to have a problem getting to the reception?"
He hesitated again.
"You know."
I glared at Kyle. "It might be best to take the pictures in the church, is all I'm saying."
"Why?"
"We've got an overhead issue."
"Overhead? As in a helicopter?"
"Ers," Kyle corrected, wincing. "As in plural." I could feel the frustration bubbling over.
"So let me get this straight. We've got a militarized operation going on right outside the church doors. Is that what you're telling me?"
"Hey," Kyle said, throwing his hands up. "Don't bust my balls. I'm just the delivery boy, here to escort you to those on the security team that actually matter."
I glanced back over to the other building, trying to decide what to do. But in the end, the approaching thump of rotary blades made the decision for me.
"Shit. Take me to Vadim."
The long hallway curved around the back of the church, connecting the bride's room with the groom's. I'd been here before, had taken this exact passageway to sneak back to Mitch and the guys after the secret rendezvous with Casey a little over 2 years ago. Arriving at the end of the corridor, I shifted nervously outside the door where Casey was waiting for the ceremony to begin. Chances were pretty damn high she wasn't going to appreciate my last-minute intrusion. The meeting with Vadim, the head of my security team, had taken longer than I'd expected, and now I was cutting it way too close. I'd hoped my self-preservation instincts would kick in and I'd be able to just push the entire discussion until after we were married, but that approach had me feeling like a fraud. She needed to hear this before we were wed. This was no little white lie I'd been withholding from her. No, this was a life-altering truth, one big enough to put an industrial-sized damper on all our lofty hopes and dreams. How could I, in good conscience, bind myself in holy matrimony to Casey, knowing I might not be able to give her what she wanted most in the world? Dating her was one thing. She still had an out. But strapping myself to her side till death did us part under false pretenses, well, someone needed to warn the poor girl. And that someone, unfortunately, had to be me. Opening the door to the bride's waiting area, I was assailed by the surging backdraft of cheap hairspray and high-end perfume. Unprepared for the onslaught of noxious chemicals, my reaction time was too slow, and before I had time to take cover, I'd already snorted up the poisonous vapor like a line of coke. The unwelcome olfactory stimulation drew an almost instantaneous pounding in my head, and a steady stream of toxic tears dripped from my eyes. Still determined to find my bride, I stumbled my way through the plume, only to find myself blocked once again, this time by a barrier of wall-to-wall green. I'd almost forgotten Casey had chosen this specific accent color until it assaulted my senses. Green. Oh, wait, sorry. Mint. She'd been very specific about that distinction, as if mint were not even a distant relative of the green family. In hindsight, I should have put my foot down on her color choice. And maybe I would have had I not lost my veto power after casually throwing out the idea of dressing the bridesmaids in black. Casey's highly sarcastic response had been, "Oh, yes, great idea. We could dress up the flower girls in some black lace, smoky eyeliner, maybe add an eyebrow piercing or two. Or better yet, Jake, a neck tattoo." It took a moment to realize the excited buzz that had greeted me upon entering the room had now been replaced by hushed whispering, and every female in the place was staring back at me in horror. I usually got a better reception from women. Wiping the tears from my burning eyes, I took a step back, surprised by the adverse reaction I was receiving. Okay, so maybe I'd underestimated the breaking of the "do not see the bride before the ceremony" wedding ritual, but did Casey's nearest and dearest really have to act like I'd broken one of the Ten Commandments? "Jake!" My mother swiftly crossed the room, appearing suddenly nauseous. "What are you doing? You can't be here." "I need to talk to Casey." "The wedding is about to start. Does your father know you left?" "I don't know. I don't run everything by him. I really need to talk to Casey." Her eyes darted around nervously. "You better not be doing what I think you're doing," she whispered, gripping my arm and trying to steer me from the room. "Mom!" I dug my feet in and pulled my arm from her hold. Casey's voice sounded from somewhere beyond. "It's okay, Michelle." The bridesmaids parted the sea of green, and at the end stood my bride, radiating beauty in a strapless white wedding gown. I'd always thought Casey was pretty, but today, in that plunging neckline sprinkled in crystals, and the soft veil and the white flowers, the sight of her nearly brought me to my knees. I swallowed hard, trying to remember the reason for my intrusion until I caught sight of Casey's eyes, flooded with tears. It was only then that it dawned on me why everyone was gaping at me now. They thought I was breaking off the wedding. Certainly the chemically induced tears I was shedding had done nothing but drive home the misperception that I was here for nefarious reasons. "Casey, I..." "Don't even think about it," she said, putting a hand up to stop me. Our eyes met and hers were blazing. With her head held high, Casey grabbed her dress and stomped toward the door. "Not here. At least give me that one courtesy."
Chapter 5. The Wedding. "Don't kill him. Just hear him out. Maybe he has a valid reason. No, you know what? He's leaving you at the altar. Kill the bastard." As I walked out of the bridal room and into the hallway, I could feel him lapping at my heels. I spun on the pointed toe of my beautiful Jimmy Choo glitter pumps, only to have him nearly crash into me. Without waiting for an explanation, I placed my hand on his chest and shoved him away with every last bit of strength I had in me. "Casey, please let me..." Oh, no. If he thought he was getting the first word in this altar dumping, he was sadly mistaken. Not only would I be taking the first word, but also the third, and very last one to boot. "I asked you last night if you wanted to talk!" Each word in the sentence became progressively louder until I was shouting the final bit. At this point, I wasn't even trying to spare the ladies on the other side of the wall. If I was going down, everyone would be going along for the ride. Mimicking Jake, I began ticking off memorized lines straight from his lying mouth. I'm fine, Casey. I'm just nervous, Casey. I want to marry you, Casey. That's what you said. For good measure, I shoved him